This is the CC Radio Podcast.
Welcome to episode 321 of the Countdown Podcast, where we are on the road, so to speak. My name is Wayne.
That was as lame an effort as you made.
I literally thought of it 13 seconds. That minute.
And suddenly it all makes sense why Wayne writes his shit
very
down.
Very sorry. Yes, I just realized I didn't write any notes. But hey, I think we had a good time.
And my name is Paul. It's a pleasure to have you here joining us today. And welcome to the podcast with Countdown Movies and sometimes television in order of awesomeness, so you don't have to. Wayne has already badly summarized the topic this week, the top 10 road movies.
That's right. You can't go anywhere right now, folks. Well, a good road trip movie can put you in a better mood.
There you go. He wrote that one down. Yeah. So maybe you should live with that one.
Paul knows when I'm reading and when I'm fucking vamping.
Long story short, we thought this might be, you can't travel, we can't travel. Basically, no one can travel at the moment. So let's travel through the magic of podcasting.
Oh, look at that. Motherfucker got all wistful on you. Well done.
And to my surprise, this topic, way broader than I thought.
Yeah.
I'm like, man.
Lots of movies can be road movies,
I'm like,
right?
This movie, fucking, oh, God. Oh, hang on. No, that's a road movie, and this is a road movie, and I love those movies.
That's right.
And then it just opened the doors. Mm-hmm. So, in the end, I ended up being very proud of my list, and I had a lot of honorable mentions.
Yeah.
Where I originally thought, oh, I'm going to struggle to make 10.
Have you ever read the novel On the Road by Jack Kerouac?
No.
It's like it and the song by the Eagles, Take It Easy.
Yep.
Are the most free, road open, wheeling kind of wicked songs ever. So for me, it's those kind of movies. They get to me.
Yeah, okay. I'm glad you explained that because I'm like, this is
what
not films.
What is this motherfucker going with? Yes. No, that's the, yeah. Anyway.
We're going to get into it on the other side of the first segment, which kicks off every show. It's a segment that we call The Recount.
Who wants a recount?
Who?
Who wants a recount?
Who?
Who wants a recount?
Who
wants a recount?
The recount, the mail room, the poll. Let's hear it.
Well, I just want to remind people that we've just had live stream for The Cure this weekend to begin with. There was another phenomenal success, even at the time of recording, which is before the end of the event. I'm going to come back on to present again another hour this evening, our time, and morning on the last day, their time. So by the end of Saturday, they had reached their goal of $15,000. So hats off. And if I had an applause sound effect on the soundboard, I would use it now.
I got
to
one.
Nick.
Oh, you like that shit?
Amazing.
You like that shit?
Amazing.
Yeah, boy.
Can you hit that button again, Wayne?
Yay. There you go. You see?
This time it was a yay on top
of
it.
Yay in there,
right there. To Nick, to Dan, and to Gerald from Two Peas on Podcast, Dan from Netflix on Swill for putting together an absolutely amazing experience and to have beaten their best ever already. Have a whole other day to go. Now they're stretching themselves to maybe make $17,500 US.
Those are real monies.
Now, Wayne, you may have seen something pop up in the account in the Facebook listener community.
A little, yes.
Where I said, you make $20,000 next year, maybe we'll release Reap.
Oh, fuck it. Is that what you said? You dirty prosser. We're not
stand resolute, motherfucker.
Hey, I don't recall any of the producers signing off on this.
Well, that's true. Wayne hasn't signed off on it yet. So hit Wayne up hard if you want. Next year, live stream The Cure. Not sure how I worked six in there. $20,000. We'll see it. A couple of the compares said, well, my credit card has $11,000 limit. We can see it this year, right? Like, Wayne might actually let go of this film for $11,000 and retire. Basically retire at that point in time.
Yeah, because that's what it would take. Also, it's all going to charity, so literally zero.
Anyway, I just thought we should shout out the amazing effort there again.
Yeah, we'll talk about this again.
Otherwise, episode 320. Last week, top 10 Aussie TV shows. We knew that we probably weren't going to get as many listens or the like from this particular episode. And it's reflected in the votes, where I did add the option to, instead of voting for your list or my list, Wayne, I hadn't seen enough to make a call. That won by a landslide, 41 votes. Right. By the way, this is the most voted on list we've ever had.
It's easy to vote that one. Yeah.
So the other, you did beat me 25 to 22 among the people who did decide to vote.
Mm-hmm.
So we won't have a result there because those 41 people may or may not have voted for anybody else.
Yeah.
But we will say, here is the feedback. Now, first of all, from Timothy Cormack, I had a lot of love for the Auntie Donna inclusion on my list. Yeah. Wayne, did you watch Auntie Donna yet?
Not yet, but I listened to that part that you played over and over because I thought it was funny.
Well, in that case, allow me now to give you another reason to listen.
All right. Oh, God.
Everything's a drum. Did you know this cup is a drum?
that cup is a drum, then my bum is a drum. Pots, cups, and even a bum. It's so much fun when everything's a drum. Everything's a drum, everything's a drum. Can someone's willy be a drum? Can you make more willy go pa-ra-pa-pum-pum? I did a cum! Everything's a drum, everything's a drum. I got a bad relationship with my mum.
There you go, I thought that might get you over the line.
I did a cum.
Goes dark as well, that song too.
Obviously, at like a fuck one, yes. Well done, okay. Look, sure.
You should check this shit out and let us know what you think. I think the listeners are keen to hear whether Auntie Donna passes your marker.
Okay, fair enough.
All right, moving on then. David Powell said, I can't not vote for chances. Sorry, Paul. Auntie Donna almost won it for you, but boobs and vampires and Nazis and Egyptian goddesses and boobs.
sounds, yeah, I get it.
Adam Alu, patron to the show, said, I think the soundboard should win. We all think that, Adam.
No one thinks that, Adam. All the time. You and Paul think it. And the soundboard, maybe.
B Dizzle, Billy Dunham from the We Watch the Thing podcast, good friend, patron of the show, said Paul wins because Australian TV is pretty much only good for sketch comedy. Also, everything's a drum.
Okay, good. Now we get that one. See where you read it.
One of the reasons I played that song there for you. And then I'm going to wrap it up with my brother.
Mm-hmm.
Now, this is Adam. He said, I automatically vote for Paul because someone has to balance out the Wayne voting block.
Which doesn't exist.
And something to do with being a brother and loyalty and blah, blah, blah. But this week I'm voting for It's a Knockout. Did we ever watch that show as a family? Basically growing up with a brother who was as heartless to me as he is now on the show. Jesus. That was a fucking low boy. Came out of nowhere.
Boom.
Watching It's a Knockout was one of the fondest memories I have with him. Come on, Paul. I believe in you this week. Well, we fell short, Adam. But thank you for the heartfelt message as well as the very, very subtle diss. Right, that's our recount for this week. Let's get into the show proper on the other side of this music cue.
Okay,
it's the subject of this week's countdown. We've talked about how we got there. Let's just get into it, I reckon. Wayne?
Bust it.
Take it away. Yep. All right, number 10.
My top 10 road trip... Sorry, my 10th road trip movie...
Road trip? Road movie?
Road movie is road trip. How's that?
Yeah, road trip honorable mention.
So road trip, is it the best movie on this list? No, it's why it's at number 10. Todd Phillips comedy.
Genius.
You know what I'm saying?
Wayne says he's not a math guy.
You know what I'm saying? Okay, so this movie, okay, yes, it's literally called Road Trip. It is a very turn of the millennium cast with Breckin Meyer, Amy Smart, Tom Green. It is about Breckin Meyer, who has Amy Smart try and bust like a move on him and videotapes it. That video gets sent across like the country to his girlfriend. He's got a road trip to her to intercept the video. Now, why it's awesome is because it's
2000 speed.
Exactly.
Internet. Apparently it takes that long.
No. They mailed it. They mailed the video. That'd be funny. Emailed it. Got to beat the email. Yep. I don't think so.
2000, maybe.
Well, maybe in Australia, yeah. So the film also has DJ Qualls in it. Yes. Now, he's the guy wearing the...
Him.
Yes, me too, and probably the last time.
No, he's in lots of shit.
He's in a couple things. Yeah. He's in a TV show. But I remember thinking to myself, because he's dancing in that Atari outfit, t-shirt that he's got, and then he nails the large girl. And anyway, a lot of stuff happened. And in particular, the bit where he's eating the... pancakes or whatever that this dude dropped down his pants and fucking did lunges for him in the kitchen and shit. And it was very, very funny on that level. But also I thought to myself, what a great world we live in where a guy with that face can become a movie star. And I thought, what a great... It's just like it was wonderful. So.
There's a moment in every single episode of this podcast where I cringe at the fact that people I know might listen. And this is it.
Life affirming for me.
So like, I want to remind you about something that's called the inside voice and the outside voice. Just because there's no one here but you and me.
I understand completely. And hey, there's a reason I've been fired for 17 places.
It's not true.
Oh, dear. Exactly. Okay, so yes, Road Trip, big fan of that one.
That's one of the better sort of funny, gross-out comedies of that era. probably gets unfairly conflated in my head with Eurotrip, which I fucking hated.
Eurotrip is a piece of shit, and it actually is mocked by many other movies in how bad it is. Yep.
All right, cool. My number 10 is also a classic film going way back before 2000, however. It is National Lampoon's Vacation.
Oh, dude, slightly, Lou.
Slightly, okay, fair enough. Yeah, this is...
I love this one.
This one's really fun. I mean, apart from the fact that I will definitely use this song on this podcast at some point.
As well you should.
Yeah. It has Chevy Chase, before we all knew that Chevy Chase was a complete utter arsehole.
Yep.
Playing Clark Griswold, who wants to take his family on a holiday and so they can bond together.
To Wally World.
To Wally World. And this film, even when I was young, was hilarious. And it stands the test of time.
Forget about it, okay? So let me just say two words to you. One, Christy. The other one, Brinkley. All right? So there's the famous scene where she's got the Ferrari, the 308 Ferrari, which everyone thought was the shit back in the
1983.
1983. Fucking Magnum PI shit, right? Red, right? And she's busting. Of course it's red. And then she's busting cap and whatever, and she's like racing him and he's speeding up. Also. That was all very cool. Then later on, he sees her at the place they're playing. They're doing picnic shit, right? And she's dancing and he's dancing with his sandwich. It's just the funniest looking thing, right? And then he eats it. And as he's in the middle of eating it, right, someone says, oh, the dog pissed on all the sandwiches. Those kinds of things and those kind of gags, always remember that shit. And it also feels great for them to be, because I've been on road trips with my family.
Yeah.
A hostage in the backseat as they authentic. Drove to fucking Albany. I'm like, fuck this shit. I hate this shit.
I think that's the thing that everyone can relate to, is whether you're a father or a mother who's just trying to keep things going.
Yeah.
Or the kids who are like, fuck this shit.
I was so fucked this shit. And let me tell you, this is before someone could strap an iPad on the back of the fucking front head seat.
Yeah, you got nothing these days. Kids.
I had
nothing.
I had to read comics, books, like a damn child. Like
a damn child, yeah. written by John Hughes and directed by Hal Ramis. So there's some good pedigree here as well.
Hal Ramis is the shit. He's always been the shit.
So, Hughes too. Love this one. I'm glad it's on your list too.
Nice one. My number nine. This is a little bit of an odd one, but for our American friends, maybe you'll understand. It's Smokey and the Bandit.
Oh, lots of people love this one.
Oh, man.
I've seen it once when I was so young, I can't remember it.
And I would have been in the same spot as you, Paul, except for this. First of all, the premise is Burt Reynolds and Sally Field is in it. And he's a longtime stunt double friend, Hal Needham. They did this movie, and it's about a bootlegging. Reynolds is the bootlegger who has to transport 400 cases of Coors beer safely from Texarkana to Atlanta, but things get complicated when
he picks beer.
That's what it is. That's what he's carrying. Beer.
Wow.
I know, right?
Prohibition.
Remember, this is 1977, this film.
Still.
Yeah, I know. But like, well.
So he weren't allowed to transport beer across state lines?
He's only just transporting them. That's his job. I don't think he's sneaking them in.
Okay, all right.
That's what his deal is, right? And save for anything, I do like this movie and I have always liked it, okay? I particularly like the sheriff and all that sort of crap, right? And there's a character called Uncle Gaylord in this series.
Yeah, different era.
It's just really weird. I'm like, oh, look at that. Anyway, when I went to Contiki, right, in America, for you American people, there's a tour company called Contiki where a lot of Australians...
I'm sure Americans know about Contiki. They can take you through Europe and shit.
No, well, they may have seen Contiki people, but the actual... It's only for, like, Kiwis and Aussies. So if you see busload of Aussies and Kiwis...
Was for...
I had no Americans in mind.
You've been
one Mexican guy and a German guy, but that was it.
There you go.
So anyway, this particular road guy, I tripped all the way across America with this over like a month, and he loved this movie, and it was very much the mood of this movie that you were on a road trip. So I've always loved that. Plus, I dug Burt Reynolds.
If you're wondering, Wayne was definitely green light.
You know what? I got not hardly any poontang.
Hardly
not,
any.
Not just like... Shut up. Young man,
how the worm has turned. Didn't know,
fuck off. I kind of should have seen that coming. And I didn't.
All right, that's your nine, Smoking the Bandit. That will get you a lot of love for sure. My number nine may not get me as much love, but maybe I've got zombies on the brain because this week we reviewed Army
of
the
Dead. What a shock.
My number nine is Zombieland.
Zombieland.
Yeah. Look, they head for the Pacific Playland amusement park in Los Angeles. A place rumored for some fucking reason to be free of zombies, because that's exactly where
they would go
and how you would keep zombies out in an amusement park. But anyway, very funny, very clever, post-modern zombie kind of film, which is way more comedy than it is horror.
I love this film, hence.
I enjoyed it a lot, 3.5 stars for me, but didn't love it because I was looking for a zombie film when I went and saw it. So expectations weighed me down a little bit. However, in subsequent viewings, I let go of that, it's gotten better.
It has gotten... I get that, and I love all that stuff that's in this movie. Did you like the second one? I can't remember.
I thought it was fine. People
thought it was great. Like,
yeah, it's not as good as the first one, but I had a good time. It was exactly what I thought it was going to be.
Agree completely. And Abigail Breslin, like, she was grown up and shit. It was fine. Yeah, I'm good with that. Okay. Well, dude, my number, what is it? Eight? That's National Lampoon's Vacation, son. So we back to you, son.
My number eight. This is where I lose the list. But I had to be true to myself.
All right, let's go. What are we doing here?
One of my favorite comedies of all time. Mm. It is absolutely a road film. It just follows the two titular characters as they travel from the east of the U.S. to the west of the U.S. to stop a film being made. I'm talking about Jay and Silent Bob Strike Back.
That's actually a good call. I don't mind that. I liked this one. I reckon this... Hang on. Was this before or after the Kevin Smith horror movie with the...
Before.
It was before.
Yeah.
Because I was going to say, this would have been... This was actually great. And I remember this movie being good. This is the one with the cat suit, the four girls in the cat suits and the fart.
Yep.
Okay. So
all of that stuff. And look, this is just a film for Kevin Smith fans who got into the viewers' universe. And it's just in joke after in joke. It would be an absolute pile of shit if you'd not seen the previous films in the series.
You know what's interesting? The final in this one, Jay and Bob's Strike, whatever the last one he did. The last one he did like a year ago.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
That one, that was supposed to be like this.
It was
horrendously bad. I love you, Kevin Smith. This
it
was
just
horrendously
goes to
bad.
Show that 18, 19 years later, whatever it is.
It's like he forgot how to make a funny movie.
Yeah, humor doesn't hold up. You can't just play the same notes and expect... And like, in literally, that film is just callbacks to this film. And this film was callbacks to the other
previous
films.
But the thing is, it worked in this film. Yeah. And I reckon if I watched it now, it'd still work. That movie was just poorly made. I don't know what happened to it. And
I have such affection for this film. But I
love it.
I could also understand if you hadn't watched it in 20 years, you watched it now and you went, that was terrible. I can get that.
I'm actually kind of interested that maybe to do that because I did like this film and I remember liking it immediately. Especially the shit talk like that, when he's like, we're going to do this and then you should eat the shit.
We
and
are masters of the clit.
That's what see, all that stuff's funny. Why wasn't it funny
again?
The
only thing that wasn't funny in that film is Will Ferrell's sheriff, whatever, law enforcement officer chasing them and they believe that, go on your way with your particularly ugly child.
When they yeah. That's
that,
right.
That stuff is dumb. But then when they get to LA again, and we're getting all the in-jokes with James Van Der Beek.
Dude, James Van Der Beek fucking Ben F.
Oh. What's his name? The guy from Loser. What's Jason Biggs.
Jason Biggs, yes.
And then we get onto the set and Mark fucking Chris Rock. Absolutely
Mark
rocking
Hamill,
it. Mark Hamill.
Cock knocker.
Fucking hilarious, man.
Yeah, see, that's all shit funny. There's a couple of like really good moments in the last one. Couple. The Matt Damon bit, the Ben Affleck bit, really good. Everything else shit. Yeah. Ah, well, what do you mean?
So yeah, but we're celebrating this one, and that's why it's my number eight.
Nice one.
Road movie.
Good one. My number seven is Planes, Trains, and Automobiles, y'all, because I couldn't not put it on here, all right?
I gotta watch the movie again. I watched it, but at the wrong time in my life. I'm not dissing it, I'm just saying. I know that watching this film as a 15 or 16 year old and not really paying attention is no way to
Be fair, I wouldn't, this is weird, I wouldn't actually expect you to care about this one so much. This is a PG kind of comedy,
yeah,
right?
But no, my point is, I understand the love for it. I think as an adult now, I would really appreciate it a lot differently.
Well, what was weird about this is it actually did there's one particular scene where, because the movie's played relatively like a realistic comedy, but there's a scene where John Candy falls asleep at the wheel and Steve Martin's next to him and they wake up and they're basically driving between these two buses. And for a second, it's like, oh my God, what's happening? And then you see for a second, Steve Martin looks at John Candy, and John Candy turns into the devil. He's in a devil.
Yeah,
I'm like,
I
was like, oh my God, you're seeing inside his brain, and then it came out again. But because it was so surreal and so weird, it was the funniest thing I'd ever seen, and it's all shit like that.
Another John Hughes film, right?
I know, and this is some heartwarming shit at the end here, because you realize what happens at the end is he's referring to his wife and this and that.
Yeah, the real power of this film is at the end you kind of forgive him for being the
which is, because he's the worst guy ever. He puts his socks in the fucking sink and then doesn't tell you, and then you watch it. Oh my God! So yeah, all that shit. But yeah, a great movie,
cool.
And I remember all of it.
If we compare single choices, your seven versus my eight, you're going to win this in a fucking landslide.
We'll see.
Which is fine.
I like your Kevin Smith.
The Hitcher is my number seven.
Dude, The Hitcher.
Yeah, Rutger Hauer version. Let me be very clear. 86 version. I want to thank Nick Orton for this because I had totally not thought of even this as a road movie until I read his feedback on the Facebook list community.
Really?
Reminded me of it. So this is a film where C. Thomas Howell.
Mm-hmm.
Love that name.
I know, right?
Yeah.
C. Thomas Howell. Oh, really?
Backpacking his way wherever he's going across the states, and he gets picked up by a dude who basically says, Rutger Hauer, I'm going to kill you like I killed the family in that car back there, or whatever that person in the car back there. He manages to, he picks up the hitchhiker, manages to kick him out of the car and escape. And then it becomes this cat and mouse game between the two of them, with Jennifer Jason Leigh becoming involved as well. as he tries to escape from him and try to alert authorities, and this guy is just chasing him the whole way through the film by hitching with various different people that he kills as he goes along. And it ends in one of the most memorable final sequences ever, as far as I'm concerned, because it goes, I don't want to spoil it, because this is not a well-known film.
Do you remember anything about this film,
yeah,
Paul?
Yeah, I'm saying, yes.
No, but do you remember about how you showed me this film?
No, I don't remember that part.
Okay, the night we hung out, the first night we hung out at your house in fucking whenever, 1990, whenever, right?
This is what I chose. That wasn't Evil Dead 2?
Evil Dead 2 and this film.
Oh, wow, okay.
Yeah, we saw two movies.
Evil Dead film?
Yeah, that's right. It was that night. So this is actually kind of similarly, like, you know,
I'm embarrassed.
For...
I remember Evil Dead 2 very well.
It might have been a subsequent night, but okay. I definitely saw this with you, and you showed it to me saying, you got to watch this film. So there you go. This is where it all started, people. Yeah. But that's cool. You know what? I can't remember how it ended.
If you can't remember how it ended, it ends surprisingly. I'll just put it that way.
All right.
So and then they remade this 20 years later. Maybe 30 years later. Maybe it's like 5 years ago.
Oh, did they?
Fucking awful.
Okay.
I can't remember who was. Maybe it was Sean Bean was the hitcher. I think he was in the remake.
Really?
It's not as good. Sean Bean's great, but he's no Rutger Hauer at full creep mode.
Well, if Sean Bean's in it, you know how it ends. cool. Nice one. My number six, everyone, is so me. It's Harold and Kumar Go to White Castle.
Yes. Yeah.
Okay, now everyone, Harold and Kumar Go to White Castle is the, you know, at the time when I saw this, it was the first time they had brought back stoner comedies and actually had the characters be stoners. There was a long period there where stoner comedies didn't have weed in it. Then there was stoner. It's a great history. But
how can a stoner comedy be a stoner comedy without?
There's a couple weed? Where the notes are played exactly the same, but there just wasn't any mention of weed in the film. I could give you examples if I really researched and came back to you. But yeah, I remember this. But no, Harold and Kumar Go to White Castle was like, okay, now these are two characters. One is an actual professional. One is a dickhead. They're both stoners. It's all right. Now, the movie itself, first of all, inspired me to visit White Castle when I went to the States. I walked past and I went, oh my God, it's a White Castle.
Well, definitely not stoned.
No, I wasn't, because it was the States and it was my first trip there. And I went, White Castle, I'm going in. I wasn't hungry, right?
No, awful, right?
Dude, White Castle tastes like fucking dicks, man. Like, it's so shit. It's these little tiny burgers and then like the fries. The fries are pretty average. And I said, can I have one burger? She goes, we want to have a deal with only
Should
one
Should I take
burger.
That as an insult?
Sure. No, it's like that. But she and I should, I'm just gonna eat this one, right? Oh, disgusting. Should be a little nice burger. It's fucking gross. Anyway, I saw White Castle, not there, but anyway. And in this movie, though, what's cool about
I
this
survived
film,
White Castle.
Well, there's actually here's something a lot of people don't know. In a movie, it's about Harold and Kumar going to White Castle for various reasons, and that's not the point. There's a moment in the film where you are actually told to smoke.
Yes.
Right? Where they smoke, you smoke. Right?
Neil Patrick Harris, right?
Right. Now, where they smoke... No, the very first beginnings of them just getting baked on a couch, and that's your cue to smoke, right? Then they smoke it various times through the film, about 3, 4, 5 more times. Every time they smoke, you smoke, okay? Then, if you have smoked when they've smoked, the end of the movie where they end up catching a lift on a leopard that is running through the fucking forest will make sense to you. Or at least you will laugh the way you're supposed to. And that's how it is. If you don't smoke when you see this film, you'll think the ending is weird. It's fantastic. I wouldn't know.
What confuses me about this complex code that you're describing in Harold and Kumar Go to White Castle is you smoke when they smoke is why then you would smoke in other films when they're not smoking?
Because, Paul, I'm told that weed makes everything better.
Right.
I wouldn't know.
Oh, of course
I'm just
not.
Saying, no, no, no. You know, that's what I heard.
Just wondering. Just wondering why anyone else would smoke ever. I mean, unless they're watching Harold and Kumar.
You're just good background.
Go to White Castle.
You
right.
ain't crisp.
Yep. That's a definitely a you choice, number seven. My number six is absolutely not a me choice because it's a musical. And, you know, we keep being teased and told we need to do the top 10 musicals of all time. Well, I'm not saying this is my number one, but it's fucking right up there.
Mm.
The Blues Brothers.
Interesting point. Please tell me about the Blues Brothers.
I'm not talking Blues Brothers 2000.
No.
Let's all pretend that cinematic pile of screaming.
Why'd they put a kid in there? What a piece of shit.
Oh, my God. The Blues Brothers 1980, however, fucking great film, hilarious, excellent songs, and it's all about them traveling across country so that they can raise the money that they need to raise to save the orphanage where they're from.
Mm-hmm.
And we get Aretha Franklin and Ray Charles and just about fucking... James Brown.
James Brown, dude. That's what it was. This was like, I remember the soundtrack for this theme. I know it way better than the movie because I just know all that Cab Calloway shit and all the fucking
Cab Calloway.
That was good shit, man. Even Minnie, I don't know why I like Minnie the Moocher, but I do.
All the songs are great. So fucking good. Rawhide.
Rawhide. We knew every fucking lyric of that. Rolling, rolling. That's the shit.
There's a new fucking theme song for the show.
Maybe you're right.
Ooh, right on that one.
Rawhide, okay.
And of course, you know, Carrie Fisher trying to murder John Belushi.
Yeah.
Nazis are chasing them. Fucking some of the best car accidents and crashes. This is just a beautiful amalgamation. John Landis directed The Blues Brothers. Here's my number six best road movie.
That'll be very popular.
Jake and Elwood.
Yeah. All right. My number five is Oh Brother, Where Art Thou?
Oh, yeah. Look, people love this movie.
You don't like it, do you?
Nah.
Okay. Well,
no, it's not for me.
It's not for you. I sort of understand. Like I said, because it's a Coen Brothers movie, the first time I watched it, I thought it was crap. Okay? Then I watched it the second time, and yes, I have a crush on George Clooney and all that sort of thing, but his whole, damn, we're in a tight spot. I say it all the time.
I got that before I did.
Sorry.
It's funny because my joke was going to be Wayne's penis when he watches the George Clooney film. Damn, we're in a tight spot.
Being my own end. Yes.
Or just your pants.
Oh, my pants, yeah. Exactly. Oh, okay, not bad. It's about the chain gang refugees who travel across like landscapes, and it's a whole thing to retrieve this buried treasure with the help of convicts like John Turturro, Tim Blake Nelson, who, by the way, made the most amount of money from this film. George Clooney.
Nelson.
Yeah, here's what happened, right? Even though George Clooney's the star, right? When they recorded the music, right? It was all dubbed except Tim Blake Nelson actually sang because he can sing.
Nice.
Right? So all of the, I am a man, Constance, yeah. I wrote that shit, right? That's all dubbed, right?
Yeah, you know, as someone who can also sing, I can totally understand.
Well, I actually love the soundtrack. Now, what happened after this movie was that soundtrack topped the Billboard charts for something like 3 years or something ridiculous like
that.
Yeah,
Man of Constant Sorrow, right?
Right. So Tim Blake Nelson got royalties from all of those, so he made way more money than anyone else in the movie. So
there you go,
because he sang on it. So it was like some funny shit like that. But other than that, the movie itself is actually pure charm, and it's a typical Coen Brothers thing where the characters talk like this, and they're seemingly like Radio 20s, right? But for some reason, I found it charming.
Yep.
So yeah, there you are.
Lots of people love this movie. I think it's mentioned multiple times during the list of feedback, which we'll get to at the end of the show. So it's a good choice on that basis. My number five. We get really personal now.
It's all personal.
My number five are just like, holy shit, these are road films, and I love every single one of them. My number five is the only Quentin Tarantino entry into my list.
Nope.
Except he only wrote it.
No? Ooh.
True Romance.
Yeah.
Man, Clarence in Alabama. Trying to get away from Gary Oldman, from the mob.
And who Gary Oldman. Fight,
oh, no, Gary Oldman dies.
For a bit.
Yeah. And get across to LA to sell the shit. And they run into one of my favorite bit characters of all time, Saul Rubinek.
Is that? Oh, yeah, Saul, of course. Yep, yes. Yep.
And, I'm going to have you killed.
Yep.
Anyway, we talked about him a couple weeks ago. This film's fantastic from beginning to end. And one of the only two films I've seen twice in one day at the cinema.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
Really?
Watched it, went back again with other friends later the same day and watched it again.
Well, as I recall, we had very little problem with this movie. I know Quentin Tarantino distanced himself from it, didn't like it, all that sort of thing. We were like, no, this is great. Gary Oldman gets shot in the balls and motherfucking Christopher Walken with that.
Christopher Walken, Dennis Hopper.
And even the fucking, like,
the final shootout at the end where people, that was because of
as you're seeing all the three people come together and then this Mexican standoff, right? That was the shit. But I remember James Gandolfini in this role, right? And I'm thinking to myself, he is menacing as hell. He was young and thin, and he was like real...
Thin's not the right word.
Well, thin. But like he was young by comparison. But he had that odd smile, and you knew he was going to fuck up Alabama, and she did all that shit to him.
And when she killed him. And the real star of this film, let's be honest, is Tony Scott's direction. This is one of those films where it really works. He's tied in shots and whatever.
And over sort of like the high sunlight and shit. Yep. Yeah, very cool, very cool. Ah, good call, man.
Love this movie. So big, big props to True Romance, my number five.
Word. My number four is, I mean, no one's surprised at this, It's Almost Famous. It's Almost Famous. Yeah, okay. Yeah. That's going to be here because it's Cameron Crowe and it's the dude. Now, the kid I've never seen again, Patrick Fugit is his name. He did Fugit! He made this movie and it went through the roof and everyone loved it, but you've never heard of him again. You've heard of Kate Hudson again, you saw Jason Lee again, whatever, but I don't know why that happened. Why I like this film? Sure, self-discovery. Sure, the usual markings of the coming-of-age tale. Sure, it's great music. The thing I actually like about the film is this is about men making dicks of themselves. That's what this film is about. Patrick Fugit, the young kid, he makes a dick of himself because he's young and he likes women.
Let's just stop to process that for a minute.
Well, even Jason Lee and the cool band members then start fretting about all the dumb shit they said.
Who's the main guy? Is it Billy Crudup?
Billy Crudup is, he's him, right? And he's doing dipshit like I'm a golden god and jumping off roofs into pools and stuff. But he's also making a dick of himself because he doesn't know what he wants. And that obviously rings very truly for me because I make a dick of myself for every day, right? But other than that, this is a magical movie. Sure, we're going to talk about Tiny Dancer and Paul had never heard it until he saw this.
What's up?
And I can't believe... There you go. So, but that itself is
multiple
just
music options this episode. At least I have many choices.
Exactly, right? Because road movies lend themselves to soundtracks. So that's me. Almost Famous.
Very nice. Number four. My number four, I don't know if it'll make your list, but I reckon you'll kick yourself if it hasn't.
Mm-hmm.
My number four is Road to Perdition.
You just won.
No,
you just won.
No, I might have won your vote, but not anyone else.
Road to Perdition is maybe the best. One of those movies ever made, man. Come on now.
This fits the bill so well, but people don't think of it like that.
You're right.
They think of it as a gangster film.
Absolutely.
Right? And a road movie, probably 15th, but directed by Sam Mendes. This is a movie which is set totally in Prohibition Chicago, I believe. And Tom Hanks plays kind of an enforcer in Paul Newman's crime family.
Mm-hmm.
And then through shenanigans that involve Daniel Craig, Paul Newman, he doesn't give the okay. Daniel Craig, one of the weaseliest characters you'll ever see.
I just realized he
tries to murder off Tom Hanks and kills his wife and one of his children. And he takes his elder boy and goes on the run to get away because Paul Newman, anyway, Paul Newman orders him dead even though he doesn't want to because his son's forced him into this situation.
Mm-hmm.
And it becomes this chase across America with Jude Law as this amazing assassin before, of course, Tom Hanks' character goes back for revenge on everybody. So,
but Tom Hanks does that cool shit. Like, I'm gonna go rob all of the banks where the mob's money is, and that'll really fuck on him, right?
Yep. Well, because basically, let's imagine it. You are a man of consummate skills to kill people, and your employer turns on you. Yeah, he's smart enough not just to go straight to the place where the people are. I'm gonna upset him. I'm gonna hurt him first.
The idea that his tool was a Tommy gun, right, with that big drum magazine, that old fucking da 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 da, right? To make that something that he somehow is an artist with that can kill anyone he wants with is really cool. It's a real cool concept. And that's why... And to make this guy, who's Daniel Craig in this, is horrendous. Like, he's just the smarmiest prick. He could be James Bond. That takes vision, my friend.
Yeah, and true. But also, this is 2002, this film, so obviously we're talking almost 20 years ago, which fucking... Jesus, that scares me. But I just love this movie unabashedly. I'm embarrassed that I don't own it on 4K.
So do I. It's a fantastic... It's actually hard to watch twice, though, because it's like... It's some horrible bits in it. But
well, you know where it's going and whatever else. But it's so gorgeous. Sam Mendes, again, like...
He's one of the best,
between
man.
This and 1917 and... which is the second one.
Is he your favorite shooter or what?
Shooter?
Director? Like, as the way the way he presents his films?
Well, I would have said definitely not before 1917, but now he's in the conversation.
Mm.
Yep.
Oh, Sam Mendes is great.
What was his first, not Spectre, what was one before? Skyfall also. Very, like, for a non-James Bond automatic lover, you got to win me over on James Bond. Skyfall, to me, along with Casino Royale, the two best James Bond films.
No doubt. All right, nice one. My number three is Rain Man. Rain Man,
See where you're coming from.
You know what I'm saying? This is so me as
but
well.
But I haven't watched it since 1990 or whatever.
I wish I could say the same. I actually seen it five years ago.
No, good. So you like the film. You should watch films you love more than once.
Oh, as I do, man. Tom Cruise plays a sleazy Charlie Babbitt, and Dustin Hoffman is his brother Raymond, who's he's like a savant, but he's, like, you know, on the spectrum or whatever.
It's autism. Full autism,
exactly. So he hopes he's initially hoping to cash in on the fortune Raymond got from their father, who left all of his money to Raymond. But then Charlie sets out on this cross-country trip because Dustin Hoffman doesn't like to fly, and finds sort of, you know, like, kinship with his brother. And that's the whole film. Now, superficially, it's a mental illness type picture, I guess. And it got huge Academy acclaim back in the day.
It's that perfect formula, right? Yeah. Someone with a disability or someone who is struggling against something which most of us don't have. And then back then, 30 years ago, an able-bodied actor personifying that and doing it so, so well.
That was his thing, the way he portrayed it. Everyone's like, well, that's just how it is, right?
No, of course it's exaggerated and whatever
of course.
And not that many autistic people are savants when it comes to certain things like numbers in this particular case. But for its time, this film was progressive.
But that whole thing with the casino, right? And then, like, he counts cards and whatever. And it's like, that's just this odd wish fulfillment thing that actually it adds to it.
Yep.
Because not only is there inherent value in having a brother, but he actually gave him real value. So I love that shit. So yes, Rain Man, good shit.
Very good choice. All right, my number four. This is with thanks to Andrew Kropel for the reminder on this one, because, again, I hadn't considered it as a road movie as well. But I love this movie, and it is a road movie. 28 Days Later.
Is it? I haven't seen it.
Oh, haven't you?
No, I don't think I've seen any of those. 28 Days Later. Is that the...
This is the one with Cillian Murphy, and he wakes up in a hospital after the zombie virus has broken out 28 days before. Right, it's not even a zombie virus, sorry. It's a rage virus. So people aren't actually technically dead when they've got this, but they are just beasts that try to maul you and tear you to pieces.
I haven't seen it.
And he walked, and the famous thing about the show is it's directed by Danny Boyle, this film, is he walks across some of the most famous landmarks with no one around them in London. So it's a UK film, a British film. And he hooks up with Naomi Harris and a couple other characters, Brendan Gleeson and Brendan Gleeson's daughter.
Oh, yeah.
And the four of them try to survive this apocalypse, which has only been contained to the island that is the UK, right?
Ah, so they're trying to get off it.
So they don't know that at the start of the film, but they're just trying to survive as they progress. They're trying to head towards, a safe haven that they've heard about.
Mm-hmm.
And the film goes from there, which is traveling through the course.
It's
incredible. The final act is probably the best example of humanity is the real evil here, which is such a cliche, tired cliche in zombie apocalyptic films. But this is one of the better examples of it that I've ever seen.
Was it a cliche when this movie came out?
Yeah, 2002 again, same as Road to Perdition. Look, not as much. The Walking Dead's really made it a cliche because they belted you over the head with it for fucking 10 years. But it was still, you know, most zombie films have humans being bad to humans when we should all be banding together. In fact, there's a trailer out right now for season 2 of a TV show called Black Summer on Netflix, which comes out middle of next month.
Yeah.
And it literally says, the biggest threat to humanity, and I'm like, oh God, don't say it, is humanity. Oh, fuck's sake. Have we not played through this already? It's such a cliche.
I look forward to missing that one.
Yeah. Whereas I liked the first season on Netflix. It was very good.
Okay.
So I'll give it a chance. But you got to do it better than Walking Fucking Dead. Anyway, back to 28 Days Later. Great film. Really loved the shit out of it. It's one of my all-time greatest films. That's why it's my number three.
Yeah, I think I've only seen bits of it. I don't think I've seen the whole thing. But my number two is either on your list or you thought about it or it's on your honorable mentions, but it's Logan.
It's also my number two.
Number two, good. All right. Now, look, I mean, you can go through. Logan is... It's Wolverine, right? Who sees the end in sights when like mutants have become a dying breed in the year 2029, and he meets a young girl who possesses similar powers, and he feels compelled to protect her, and this revitalizes his ability to care for those around him, and he's also taking care of a fucked up old Professor X, who's dangerous because of his powers. And it's on this list because I think it's probably one of the best movies I've ever seen. Am I right?
Hell yeah!
I mean, it's so different from the superhero movies. On one, you know, it's a serious R-rated film, plenty of swearing and violence. Hearing Professor X say fuck and shit is really funny, but it's not that. But it's a Western. It's kind of a Western, and seems
ostensibly.
Yeah. So the whole like the just
it's
the
a road movie
it,
with
it's Western definitely ones. Yeah a road movie with that kind of shit.
They go on the run together.
Exactly. And the have you seen that kid again? She was amazing.
Daphne Keene. No, I don't believe I have.
Maybe. No, I hope her parents didn't mute her. No, but she was brilliant in this film. So yeah, I mean, please tell me.
Real show. I think they've tapped her maybe because we are 3-4 years later now. She's 15, 16, 17 years old now.
Yeah, she
wouldn't surprise me if we see a full blown sequel, so to speak, to Logan with her as an
X-20 or X-20,
yeah,
X-23, I think it was.
It was, yeah.
I think in my head it was.
Maybe not an adult, but an older adolescent. That could be a really good film.
Yeah,
let's just let her age up a little bit.
And she should have the career of Hailee Steinfeld, like the
from True Grit.
Yeah, so totally
great film. Can't fault you. Obviously, same as my number two. You've said everything other than just how powerful this movie is. Directed by James Mangold, just brought something completely different to the superhero genre, which we had never seen before, and to this point still haven't seen again. As much as Zack Snyder might like to try it with
I think
Justice
I gotta watch
League.
This again, man.
Such a good movie.
Isn't Mangold?
I think it was both our favorite films of 2017. In a landslide victory. And in fact, 2017 was a good year comparatively to what we've seen the last couple of years.
Well, yeah.
Thanks to COVID. But
did I hear that Mangold is doing The Matrix?
No.
Did I hear that?
I don't think so. No, it's Wachowskis again.
It is them again. Yeah. He's doing he's doing Indiana Jones, man.
Is that right?
That's what I heard. That's what I heard. So,
Could be.
You know, that if anyone can do
so
it,
so
man.
Looking forward to the fourth film in the Indiana Jones franchise.
Again, wicked. Nice one. So there you are.
All right, well, let's get a recap then, because we're bouncing straight back to you for your number one, Wayne, and we're not going to have the same. Well, maybe we will. Maybe we will. I think you are smart enough to not to have left this one off your list, so let's
find
out.
One would think, but who knows?
Yeah, okay. Give us your 10 through 2 and then reveal your number one.
Coolio. Number 10, Road Trip. 9, Smokey and the Bandit. 8, National Lampoon's Vacation. 7, Planes, Trains, and Automobiles. 6, Harold and Kumar Go to White Castle. 5, Oh Brother, Where Art Thou? 4, Almost Famous. 3, Rain Man. 2,
Logan.
Skipped my notes there. 2 is Logan. And my number one is the same as Paul's number one. It's Mad Max Fury Road.
Oh, no. No, that's right.
It's totally okay. And I was thinking, let's piss Paul off and make it 10 or not at all. But the truth
I wish
is,
you had made it 10, then people would have ragged on you.
But this is, I think this is the most, first of all, it's maybe the best example of a road movie because it's literally only road in this movie.
Not right? Even roads, just desert.
Yeah, sort of like path, movement, really. Movement, yeah, exactly, yeah. Right? So, and then, yes, it's action-packed in this and that, but other than that, this is a film that is, because of all the Aussie like Mad Maxes and stuff, this has Mad Max Aussie movie sensibility in a Hollywood film, and it's eye-popping. And I know that the production was so troubled and almost like fucked up and everything, but it produced this thing. It made it all worthwhile. I remember thinking that, going, fuck, this is amazing. So yeah, Paul, please. Bitch, please.
You are 100% right. I couldn't have said anything that better. Like, just straight away, this film comes instantly to mind when we think of a road film for all the reasons that you said. But it just stands out so much above all the rest of them because it is, A, it's purely a road film, which happens to be an action adventure, but has heart, it has character development, mainly for Charlize Theron.
Yeah, let's face it, it's her. It's Furiosa movie. Film. Right?
But even the other big characters, you kind of get just enough out of them. Even like Megan Gale bobbing up as this warrior chick who didn't get to run over through the course of like,
man, I forgot about that.
I love this movie so much. It's still, to this day, when I watch it on 4K, there are certain sequences my jaw drops, and I've seen it 6-7 times already.
Is it the sandstorm? Is that
the
one
sandstorm
of them?
Is amazing, but the final battle where the tank is exploding and the things, oh my god, that side shot, just...
Is this some... Did they have dudes dipping up and down on sticks in this one? Yeah, they did, yeah. Because I always remember the guitarist.
The guitarist, right? Of course. Such an iconic moment.
Yeah, which is
and it's
weird.
Literally, we travel to point A, we go back to point B, point B and go back to point A for reasons that are unveiled through the film.
Some people have problems with that. I don't
either, because who gives a shit?
I know, it's just I'm still moving. We got to do some shit,
it's
man.
Still action aplenty and amazement all the way through. So yeah, Mad Max Fury Road, absolutely my number one. And of course, it's not often we have one and two the same. In fact, very rarely, I would suggest.
Right. Do you want to give us your...
I'll very quickly run it down, and then we'll get into the pop 10 as your feedback on the topic at hand. Number 10, National Lampoon's Vacation. 9, Zombieland. 8, Jane Silent Bob Strike Back. 7, The Hitcher from 1986. 6, The Blues Brothers. 5, True Romance. 4, Wayne's Big Omission, Road to Perdition. 3, 28 Days Later. 2, Logan and S. Number 1, Mad Max : Fury Road.
Yes. Okay. That's
all right.
Nice.
Well, honorable mentions, just rattle them off, Wayne, real quick.
Oh, sure. Midnight Run.
Yep. Also on my list.
Over the Top.
Like, not on my list.
I know. Sideways. Crossroads. Dogma.
Crossroads?
Yeah, man. Crossroads. Like,
that with Ralph Macchio.
Okay, listen up. You're a guitarist now, okay? If you are a guitarist, no, I'm not really a guitarist, you should watch Crossroads if you play the guitar. It's a Guitar Geeks movie. Trust me. Steve Vai is in it and all kinds of shit, man. All right?
Still.
I know. Look, Ralph Macchio had to learn the fingering because he couldn't quite play, but it's actually accurate, so it's very cool. Anyway, and Michael...
Wayne ironically learned the fingering a long time ago.
Not that long ago, sadly. Michael? I liked it. That's with fucking John Travolta.
What, Angel?
Yeah, the Angel one. I liked that movie, man. All right? And From Dusk Till Dawn, which I'm amazed did not make
a
list.
No, it was very much my list. But you know why? Because the first half of the film is a great road movie. The second half of the film, they're stuck in the same place.
That was me too. Yeah. Let me ask you this. Do you think Speed is a road movie? It's a bit of a weird one.
It could absolutely be.
You probably get there. Because most of it's on the road.
Yes, because they are moving. But
it's not them traveling.
But they're not traveling from place to place.
Exactly.
They're just in motion.
That's the only reason that's on mine. Yeah, so there you are.
So, all right. So, Little Miss Sunshine.
Oh, yes.
Great film. Yes, from Dusk Till Dawn. Yes, from Midnight Run. Borat.
Fucking hate Borat.
And Thelma and Louise.
Sure.
Beyond Road Trip, which I also mentioned. So Thelma Lees was very much there in my 10 spot till the very, very end.
No, it's on brief, big time.
All right, that's Alice. What about yours? As mentioned, let's get into it on the other side of this Pop 10 Music Cue.
Talk about
Pop 10.
Talk about
Pop 10.
Kicking off this week's Top 10 with Josh Ragland, who said, number 3, The Muppet Movie features the best road trip tune ever. Moving right along. I'm assuming. I don't know. I'm just making that
That's
up.
Really, really good. And yes, it is.
Maybe that could be the music goes out.
Turn left at the fork of the road. Yeah, it's a thing.
Dung, dung, dung.
Yeah, that's it. There it is.
Number 2, Mad Max Fury Road. Number 1, Wayne. Oh, brother. We're out there.
What up, dog?
Mike Margot, my apologies. Patron to the show says, road trip, but it's your dog. Blues Brothers, we're on a mission from Guard and Fury Road. Grr. Amanda Waddle said, Sex Drive, unexpected little funny movie.
It actually is. I'm telling you, you wouldn't think so.
Due Date, Robert Downey Jr. is hilarious in this. And number 1, Logan, the best of the Wolverine films, in my opinion, 100%.
Did you see Due Date?
Maybe.
A lot of people shit on that one, so I haven't actually seen it. Okay.
Chris Yeeney, another patron extraordinaire. Thelma Louise, two mules for Sister Sarah.
Two mules. Okay.
I think that's an old one. Is it Clint Eastwood film? Maybe. But I'm making that shit up. And number one, Smokey and the Bandit.
What?
Oh. Nice. Blake Jarvis said Green Book at three, two Blues Brothers, and number one, Mad Max : Fury Road.
Good. No, Green Book's, yeah.
David Power said number three, Easy Rider 2, Paris, Texas, and number one, Badlands. Like someone has fucking Terrence Malick on the brain. Actually, I think Badlands is the only one he directed there. Good classic ones there. Paris, Texas, not my cup of tea, but I totally understand why it is others. Jonathan Kidd, The Muppet Movie, loved those animals with hands up their asses. Number two, Planes, Trains, Automobiles, easily my favorite John Hughes film. And number one, The Road. Jesus, that ruined date night.
That ends not well, right? Emil Hirsch one?
I think Viggo Mortensen.
Oh, Viggo Mortensen. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And it does look, it's a harsh film. Guy Pearce is in it.
Oh, bloody hell.
Based on a novel by Cormac McCarthy. B-Dizzle, Billy Dunham, We Watch the Thing podcast, Planes, Trains, and Automobiles, Little Miss Sunshine, and number one, The Blues Brothers. Smiley Samani, mate to us, said, look, there's been lots of obvious ones mentioned already. The last detail, two Navy men are ordered to bring a young offender to prison, but decide to show you one last good time along the way. Funny, heartwarming, heartbreaking, my favorite Jack Nicholson movie. I've never heard of it.
Never heard of that one.
Number two, Cheech and Chong's Up in Smoke.
Sure.
Buddy movie about two slackers, drug-filled shenanigans. First time I watched this, I laughed so hard I weed a little.
Oh, Cheech and Chong's classic, man.
And number one, I like this take. I seriously considered borrowing it, but I didn't in the end. Stealing it, sorry. Lord of the Rings trilogy, the ultimate road trip movie. All about two easygoing dudes on an adventure with some mates they pick up on the way.
I would have had your ass for that one. I would have had your ass.
Here you are, Smiley. Ethan Petrie said Logan, his grandfather, father, and daughter travel to find a new home. Goofy movie. Father and son go on a cross-country road adventure. And Mad Max Fury Road, it's Mad Max.
There you go.
Jocelyn Pederick. Might be the first time contributor to the show. So, Jocelyn, thank you so much.
Hey, Joss.
Three is tricky. Obviously, Mad Max, but everyone has said that already. Planes, Trains, Automobiles, Wayne, Oh Brother, Where Art Thou, and Thelma and Louise.
I like this, Jocelyn.
Paul Steed said The Peanut Butter Falcon, which is a great movie with Shia LaBeouf.
I never saw that, but I've heard about it.
The Straight Story, as directed by David Lynch. And Stand By Me. Watched it again last month and it still holds up brilliantly.
Good call. Good call. Never saw that.
Didn't thought that one. Laurie Miller said topic was tough, but Pee-wee's Big Adventure. Quirky, funny, engaging, great music. Grape the Wrath, classic from 1940. Midwesterners leave their Dust Bowl farm, head to California, hoping for salvation.
I never read the book. You saw it?
I've seen the movie. Yeah, there is not, for, okay. Book, not for me, but totally respect the choice. And I won Road to Perdition, stellar cast, muted music, tense, and brilliant cat and mouse. That's a great, great choice. Last one, John Amenta, Road Trip. It's in the name.
Thank you.
Actually, really funny movie from early 2000s, released The Fury Mitch. The Muppet Movie, Kermit and Fozzie driving cross country, meeting new friends along the way. Classic. And number one, well, not even ordered here, Planes, Trains, and Automobiles. Those aren't pillows.
That's right. That's the best movie in the movie. Hand and ass. Word. All right.
There we are. That is your feedback on the topic at hand. Thanks to everyone who got back to us, and apologies if we didn't get to your feedback on the topic for today. We really do truly appreciate the lifeblood. Lifeblood's what I'm looking for.
I think so.
For this particular episode. Indeed, the podcast as a whole. All right, Wayne. What are we doing next week for episode 322 of the Countdown Movie and TV Reviews podcast?
The top 10 ridiculous movie missions.
Right. Uh-huh. So we're going to shit on some dumb...
Yeah, like, this was a shit idea, or it was like just ridiculous looking-ish. Or it was.
It was executed badly, or the concept was so dumb, yet people went ahead and just signed up for it.
And they're doing it for
And
fun.
Then doing it, whether they lived, died, or triumphed.
It was ridiculous.
It was redonkulous.
That's right.
That's episode 322 on the Countdown Movie TV Reviews. Wayne, how do the listeners get back to us with their feedback on the topic at hand, or indeed more generally?
Google the Countdown Podcast and get our socials, or send us an email at thecountdownpodcast@gmail.com.
We're on Twitter at the Countdown PC. Like and follow the show via Podbean, the app, or indeed the website, and the Facebook community links in the show notes to get on board with some great conversation week in and week out about the topics on the show, and indeed beyond that. And lastly, ccradio.com.au for not just ourselves, but more importantly, for the other great shows on the network. Believe, which is the juggernaut of the network show, and Comic Confidential, with Rachel, Amy, Troy.
And Cade.
And, no, not really Cade. Cade's just doing Believe now. Let's just face it.
Trey. Troy?
Trey?
Trey.
Trey.
The ladies and Troy.
Is that like a combination of Troy and Amy? It's Trey.
Just Trey me. Rachel. Trey. All right.
Check them out as well. And that is it for today. Thank you so much for joining us for this latest episode. My name is Paul.
My name is Wayne.
And this has been The Soundboard.
You know, A, oh, B, you're a C, cunt. D,
what a fucking asshole.
You're a bitch.
So sorry, everyone.
Look at this bitch. I'm sorry. I told you to
suck on some dick. Eat some balls.
Suck on my
ass.
We will, if you want to come back.
No, you won't come back. Fuck Paul.
Or Wayne for ruining shit. We'll catch you next week.
Moving right along. Footloose and fancy free. Getting there is half the fun. Come share it with me. Moving right along. Dum-dum-dum-dum-dum. We'll learn to share the load. We don't need a map to keep this show on the road.
Hey, Fozzie, I want you to turn left if you come to a fork in the road.
Yes, sir. Turn left at the fork in the road. Permit.
I don't believe that.
Everything's a drum.
If that gets in my head, I'm going to fucking shit on your face.
Again?
Yeah. This time it'll be...
Oh, the other thing that happened this week was my mum came around. She's like, I watched that video.
Oh, shit!
She's like, it's so funny. She goes, when you were...
She's talking about you putting a load in that fucking woman. Oh,
she's like, when you were talking about having sex with that girl, oh, I was laughing so hard. I'm like, mum...
Oh, my God! That's so weird! Really? I didn't even think about that, dude.
And then she goes, Wayne talks a lot, doesn't he? I'm like, you've never listened to the fucking show nor met Wayne before, have you?
Oh, no!
She goes, you are so different. You're so relaxed. I'm like, mum, I'm a son around you.
Yes!
I'm not a person around other people.
That's hilarious.
If you wonder what we're talking about, ask us anything. Check the video out. Like it, you know, do that thing. Subscribe to the show. Yeah, apparently, we want to get to 100 subscriptions. So.
Yeah, check our YouTube channel or the Facebook post feeds.
Yeah, this could be at the end of the show.
What the fuck? I can't believe your mum heard about you talking about fucking women. That's... I don't know how I'd feel about that. Unfortunately, my mother is so technophobic, she wouldn't have any clue what...
And then the friend that we talked about, you know, basically me shitting in his house.
Oh, yeah.
He also commented, so I'm like... Can you stop putting this out wide, Wade?
No, man. Everyone needs to hear about coming and shitting. All right.